Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Adam Sturgeon and Daniel Monkman are each musicians, songwriters, and singers based in Southern Ontario in Canada. Renowned for his work in the band Whoopso and as a founder of Out of Sound Records, Sturgeon now leads a powerful band called Status Non-Status, whose latest album is 1, 2, 3, 4, 500 Years, which was released on May 28, 2021 by You've Changed Records and The Grizzlar. Monkman is the leader of the gorgeous noise rock band Zune, whose 2020 album, Bleached Waves, was shortlisted for Canada's prestigious Polaris Music Prize and turned more people on to one of the most powerful young voices in underground rock music today. After becoming friends who could commiserate and relate to one another as Anishinaabe creative forces in Canadian music, Sturgeon and Monkman determined that they could collaborate, and they formed a new band together called Ombigaze. Produced by Broken Social Scene's Kevin Drew, and recorded at the tragically hip studio, The Bathhouse, Sewn Back Together is Ombigaze's wonderful debut and was released by Arts and Crafts on February 10th, 2022. Adam and Daniel connected with me recently to discuss this new band and their new record, getting back into cold Canada after being at South by Southwest in warm Austin, Texas, the origin and significance of their band name and their interest in noise, how Kevin Drew helped them in many more ways than one, putting the Canadian music industry on notice, why their distinctive songwriting approaches work so well together, learning more and teaching others about their Anishinaabe heritage, family traumas, and residential schools, what it's like inside of the bathhouse, gearing up to play Massey Hall on April 20th, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 680 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Adam Sturgeon and Daniel Monkman of Ombigaze, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Hey, Vish.
You doing all right there?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Where in the world are you?
I'm in London, Ontario.
Yes, London. How are things feeling in London today? Everything good?
Well, we have a bunch of snow, and we're just getting home from Austin, so back in Canada.
Right, yes. Austin was unsnowed. There was no snow in Austin, was there?
There was not a lot of snow anywhere in the U.S. when I was traveling, but...
except for New York.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Seems like months ago.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. It's nice to have you back in Canada. I hope you're happy to be back on some level.
Yep, to a point. The border situation always frustrates me, and then add in some COVID protocols and the like.
Yeah. Wait. Do you have trouble getting back into the country? I know can be rough getting across to the States, but they give you grief when you're coming back.
Well, I don't know. I think that there's just a particular type that likes to man those posts. Yeah. And, as Indigenous people, we always have a bit of fear. Mm. That said, I mean, a lot of time people don't really notice that I'm Indigenous. So we've had that discussion before, but you still have those feelings of how you're potentially going to be treated because of those things.
Right. Gotcha. All right. Well, I appreciate you, and I appreciate that you're back, and I'm sorry about the snow. Although I live in Edmonton, so I have very little sympathy for you. There's always, there's always snow. It's snow. It hasn't gone away. I thought we had a day here that was like 18 degrees Celsius, which is for those in America or anywhere else that don't do the Celsius thing. That's pretty warm. And then the next day it was like -9 or something. Like it's very weird weather-wise. Anyway, we all have to deal with that, and that's the way it is, so... Anyway, it's good. Daniel, are you there?
Hey, Vish.
How's it going?
it's going great. It's a little cold, as Adam was saying. Kind of get comfortable with the warm weather in Texas.
Yeah.
Hanging out by pools. And now I hang out by snow again.
Yeah, that's the way the world is. Had you been to Texas before this trip?
No, just I've only seen photos of South By and never thought I would actually play it.
Right. Well, you deserve to play it. As you know, I'm a fan of your work in Zune, and now you've got this project. You deserve to play it. You should be playing that thing all the time. Was it fun, though? I have heard from some friends and colleagues that they came back and they are sick, or it was a bit of a – it was particularly busy and weird. Did you totally enjoy yourself?
Well, leading up to it, yeah, like all of my friends who have been in bands for a long time, and anytime I would talk about South By, they would just kind of like scoff at me, and I learned that it was pretty chaotic through like the past, and but I heard that this year was pretty simplified, so I had a really good time. I got to see a lot of bands, and yeah, my experience was great. I had a lot of fun.
Okay, good. That's good.
Yeah.
I've only been once myself. It was a long time ago, but it was, yeah, it was just a lot. It was, it's more, have you ever been, Daniel, to like North by Northeast in Toronto or?
I think I played it once, but we just like played one show and then we took off back to Hamilton.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you didn't, but it doesn't seem, this felt, did it feel, I'm just going to speculate, South by Southwest felt different than North by Northeast?
That's what I was told. I was told that this year South by Southwest was pretty tamed compared to previous years, where they just kind of bring big acts to like bring a bunch of people, but no one's really going to the mid-range artist shows. But this year they had only just like a few bigger artists, but it gave time for everyone to see a lot of different bands. But you know, it, with COVID, it was still staggering numbers.
Yeah. Now it sounds like you were both down there together, so I presume you were doing some Ombigaze business, but at the same time you're in separate groups. Zune, Daniel's in Zune. Adam, you're in Status Non-Status. Did you guys play separate sets, or did you just play as a duo?
We were actually there on our sort of solo endeavors. So we have yet to play our first show, Daniel and I. Yeah. Our first show is April 20th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't even know that. Oh, so you were just there coincidentally together? Is that what you're saying, Adam?
Yeah, we ran into each other in a few different spots. But that's the way that it's been going for us for a couple of years. I think that that's kind of how we started to... think about putting this project together.
I see. Oh, yeah, just always in the same spots but not playing together. I see what you're saying. That's interesting. Daniel, was there ever a talk while you were in Austin to, like, why don't we just... Or rather, I should say, did you collaborate at all? Like, did you join each other on stage at any point, Daniel, or no?
I think that was a discussion before. I just... Or maybe a fantasy that I was, like, playing in my head was, like, oh, it'd be so cool if we could do, like, an Ombigaze, like, the four of us, just because one of the fifth members was back in London, but we were, at least I fantasized about us playing like some secret show at South by Southwest, but that will happen.
Good. Well, this is fun. I like that. So you're friends first. I always like to say when you have a relationship, I've learned from experience, like with a person, you know, like if you're going to spend your life with someone, it's always good to be friends first. That's what I think, before you commit to, like, you know, the whole thing. Sometimes people start dating, and then you talk to them 2 weeks later, and they're married. And I'm like, what? You just met. How is that possible? You two have had a long, friendly courtship, it sounds like. Is that fair, Adam?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that that's definitely the way it started. There's, for both of us, a long period of time where maybe we sort of felt just a little bit isolated, not entirely. I mean, we have great collaborators in our personal endeavors for sure. But, you know, just as we kind of started crossing paths, we really started to realize that we had a lot of commonality just because of our culture and our desires to uplift that part of ourselves and our communities. So really it all started kind of just... supporting each other kind of in the back end, you know, this is going on with this. I was asked to play this show. Like, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, or like, yo, man, I'm on the road and I'm just like struggling out here. What's up? And that's really how it started for us. And then it just became apparent that we needed to make some music together. But it was also just very cool to know that there was kind of someone else out there doing something pretty similar.
Yeah, no, for sure. Daniel, can you, so we got a little bit of background in terms of sort of the hypothetical nature of how this project would come together, but do you remember your first, I guess, sort of being in a room together, jamming, or even having a really serious conversation about what the sound of this project might be? Daniel, can you speak to that? Do you remember do you have any sense memory of when you first started playing together with Adam?
Playing together on our solo stuff and just crossing paths was a while ago, you know, that was like 2017 or something maybe. And but for this project, we always talked about it. We always wanted to put aside time, and it just felt like the world was kind of working against us. And then COVID happened, and all of a sudden we had like some free time, and I know I was going through a lot, and so was Adam, and so we just kind of on our own time were writing songs that could be potentially for this new project. And but I remember specifically like sitting in my room one time being like, I wrote a song and I was like, this would be perfect for this new project, this theoretical project that we might put together. Yeah. And then after that, it just got easier to like write songs for it, you know?
I see. Okay. And did you, was it trading song ideas remotely, or were you often in rooms together there, Daniel?
For the most part, it was separate rooms. We were just, I just had a file that I would just send over to Adam and be like, yo, I wrote this riff. What do you think?
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. Now, I was sent some information here that suggests that the term that you've named this group, and again, forgive me if I get this wrong at any point, you tell me. I think I've got it. It's Om Bigize. Is that correct?
It's pretty good.
Not bad? What could tell? Improve. I need to improve. Tell me what I could be saying or doing differently.
Well, I guess like phonetically, we were talked about before, like Om, mm-hmm. like the Indian Om, and mm-hmm. then B, like a bumblebee, and then Gizeh.
Gizeh, yeah.
See,
I keep, okay. I don't, I feel a bit badly, but I also, it's a new term for me. Adam, how did you come upon this term?
Well, it's, I think a big part of our culture is language and revitalization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're all still just learning. Daniel and mm-hmm. I, despite the fact that we're these Anishinaabe artists, we're artists that are Anishinaabe, we're still learning about our culture. And that's like really the practice of him and I working together, is just putting extra focus on who we are as people, learning about our ancestors, reconnecting those paths, and trying to take steps forward, mm-hmm. and putting our language out there for people to even attempt is mm-hmm. fine with me. I don't get offended by mispronunciation. In fact, like, we have many dialects, so
yep.
you might hear us say Om Bigize. You know, and that's just us speaking really quickly. And, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you'd hear an older speaker, Om Bikaze, you know, with really good language skills. And, you know, we don't have those. And all we're trying to do is put it forward.
Yeah.
And, no, I think that's great.
Yeah. No, I agree. So what I was sent was that the term itself translates into she or he, or they, I suppose, is noisy. Daniel, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so that makes sense to me, knowing you two, that you would be attracted to noise on some level, just given what you do. But was there anything about the meaning that also seemed fitting, Daniel, for a project with you and Adam?
I think my interpretation of it is kind of like when we're, the way that my dad would describe it to me as a child, we're, the way that he described like our interaction with like the creator, and like how when we're in a powwow circle and we're playing like the drums like really loud, and we're screaming at the top of our lungs, it's usually us like calling out to the creator not for something, but just to like continue that relationship with creator and acknowledge that we're together with them. And I think that's, from my interpretation with what we're doing with our music, it's like kind of like our version of the powwow. And just there to make some noise and, you know, show people that we're here still.
So it has, in your mind, it's not quite ceremonial, but it has like it's an invocation. It is a spiritual invocation of some kind to even give yourself this term. Is that kind of what you're saying, Daniel?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Adam, does that follow for you? Like, is that your interpretation of things? Is that the feeling it gives you?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that what Daniel's saying is he's speaking his interpretation, and we had to put ourselves together on that too. So when we're in our circles and gathering and making our noise, we're putting our minds together to do it and finding that common thread for ourselves. So I really like that actually a lot.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. So I'm curious about distinguishing what you two are doing together. Obviously, it's you two, so that makes sense. It's different than your other works. But I'm curious, Adam, if you can talk about what distinguishes this particularly sonically, maybe lyrically, from what you do in Status Non-Status, what you which for those who I've established this in the introduction, I suppose, but formerly Whoopso, now Status Non-Status. What do you suppose playing with Daniel in this project gives you or allows you to discuss, if you will, that maybe you're not chasing after as much in Status Non-Status? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of different things that came out in our recording process and a lot of new challenges and things we didn't necessarily see. But I've heard Daniel talk about how it's hard to lift heavy things on your own. Hmm. And that there's like a strength in us doing it together, that each of our individual stories are a little bit easier because there's a backbone and support system that isn't always there in our other music. And yeah, like we said, we love our other collaborators and our other projects, but you know, it's very much, we had to protect that. It's our thing. And there's a struggle in that. And in this mm-hmm. project, Daniel and I kind of like let it all go. And we really have Kevin to thank in a lot of ways for helping us see that vision for ourselves. Yeah. He really uplifted us and encouraged us to kind of like take it all back. So it seems like we were able to lean into our culture even more because of that, and find a new sound, because it was, you know, maybe we pictured just the coalition of our sounds, and instead we just kind of like stripped it all back and started over, which is really kind of cool. We have a new foundation to work from.
Can you characterize that sound a little bit more, though? I appreciate what you're saying, and I feel like it changes from song to song on this wonderful record, but can you home in on that a little bit?
Well, I think for me, it was very lyrically driven in a lot of ways. Like if we're going to really break down the sonic approach, I think for me, it was just about really leaning into the things that I wanted to say and finding a positive voice in that. And doing that for and with Daniel as well. So like really stepping behind him on his tracks as well, and just finding my pockets rather than trying to punch through a door or something like that.
Right. Right.
So I guess I'm not like a genre purist or anything. So I don't really like, I'm a folk artist, I guess. Right. And even when I'm playing it, my heaviest songs, I still think of it as kind of folk music, because I think we're storytellers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Before I go to Daniel, though, there's one thing Adam, you and I haven't really spoken since you've taken on the name, rather, Status Non-Status. Is it the same people as you were playing with before? Is it more of a solo project? I'm trying to wrap my head around that.
It was just a little bit about recreating my space, but there's kind of a new, it's kind of a new thing in a lot of ways now. It was intended to be sort of one and the same, but over the years, sort of myself and Kirsten Palm have always been sort of the core members, with her having a lot of familial absence, just with having kids and some deaths in the family and some other things go on.
So
over the time, it was always kind of my thing forward, but I do have some pretty committed members, like Eric Lorenzo's been with me forever, and now his brother Steve has joined. So, you know, trying to put the family and the good intentions into our music.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the quote about, you know, you can't, what was the quote that you said, Daniel said? I know Daniel's here. He can hear us.
Yeah. it's hard to lift heavy things on your own.
That's right. So I wondered how alone you felt, and maybe that's what drew you to Daniel potentially as well. But you know, I appreciate where you're coming from there. So Daniel, kind of similar line of questioning, I suppose. You have Zune. It has a particular aesthetic on some level. What do you suppose playing with Adam brings to you as a creative person, and what do you suppose you're bringing to him for this work together?
Yeah, I think definitely it's just like having that support system.
Yeah.
And Adam's spoken about this before, where we don't really have to like relive our traumas all the time. We just like can understand if we're going through something, say if it's about like, I don't know, racial type stuff, or just like getting frustrated that, you know, like it's hard to learn our language sometimes. Yeah. And yeah, it's just like, it's kind of like, it's like therapy, you know, it's like this type of therapy that I used to do, where in the beginning of it, it was just about like trying to get you to a state of calm. Mm-hmm. So that your brain is more susceptible to healing. And this project, I'm really calm, and I'm like, okay, I don't have to like carry this whole thing on my own. And you can just share the weight. And and I think that's really important for my healing project, my healing path, but it is like a project.
Yeah.
And I think I bring that to the project too, you know, in a way where Adam can lean on me. And yeah, and I think that's why we do music, you know.
Yeah. Time.
Yeah. Now Adam had invoked Kevin, and I want to talk about Kevin just a little bit, because I don't know if you guys remember this, but sometime in July, I think it was 2021. I had an interview scheduled with Kevin for this show, and I got on the thing with Kevin. I think it was Zoom, probably, or something like this. We're using Zoom right now. But anyway, I'm on the thing there, and Kevin's face pops up on the screen, and you guys are there. And I was like, what? What happened? And then, Daniel, have we ever met before then?
No, that's how we scheduled to do an interview with you. It was through that. I was just walking to get like a bubbly in the back.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm that's drinking how we bubbly now.
So Adam and I have a long history of knowing one another from our times together in Guelph and Southern Ontario, I guess. Wow. But yeah, Daniel, can you talk about, Adam talked about Kevin just a little bit, but I think that's sort of fortuitous that's how we met on some level. So I wonder if we can go back to that moment and that session, maybe, but maybe even actually before that. How, Daniel, did you guys end up working with Kevin Drew? What was the connection there exactly?
Kevin and I have a mutual friend named Nav. And Nav worked for like, I think he was like a music or movie producer. He had that company Elevation Pictures or something.
Yep.
And he just started messaging me through Gmail. And it was like at the height of putting out my record. And we just always were talking. And then one day he was like, hey, I'm friends with Kevin Drew. Like, I'm going to pass along your record to him. I was like, okay, cool, man. I was like, at the point, I didn't really know who Kevin Drew was. And, but then I looked it up and I was like, oh, wow. I was like, Broken Social Scene.
Yeah,
that's
cool. Yeah.
And then I was looking for someone to mix my record, and I kind of approached him, and he was like, oh, I don't really have the equipment to do that, but I know someone who can. And then we kind of just were talking sometimes. And then when Adam and I got together, I was like, hey man, you're like friends with Kevin, like why don't you ask him to produce the record or like work with us? And then Adam called him, I guess, and I don't know, maybe like it was a few hours later Kevin was down and gave us his recording time.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Adam, how do you know Kevin?
I met Kevin through the Downey Wenchack Foundation. We met doing an event around some education of residential schools, and I was kind of surprised to see Kevin there. And I think he would tell you that I put a hit out on the music industry that maybe only he would understand when we were in this space. And we've kind of been friends ever since. He's like the first person that called me when the pandemic first hit and my band had canceled like 100 shows. And yeah, he's just always been kind of a support, which I've always found to be, well, one rather interesting, because I don't think that a lot of people would think that we're incredibly similar people from similar places in life or whatever. But just like Daniel said, like our whole project is based around our healing and wellness. And Kevin's really been on that tip with us through the process. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, Kevin's a very supportive person, so I can relate to what you're saying there. Sorry, can I just go back to what your hit on the music industry was? That shouldn't be something we bypass. What did that consist of?
Well, just how much of a struggle it is, and I feel really fortunate since that time I started working with You've Changed Records, who I think also put a hit out on the music industry where it's like, okay, we're going to participate, but we're going to try to take care of our artists and,
I see.
We got to play a little bit of a game. I've always thought of the music industry as just a game, just a big giant game. Yeah. And so it's just like trying to, beat them at their own game.
Yeah. That's your sports background. That's your hockey playing background. Maybe a little bit competitive, but also seeing it as a game.
Yeah. I mean, both of those industries are pretty ruthless. It's not the easiest career choice, but
I know that from our last conversation about remember how surprised I was, Adam, when you were on talking about the hockey stuff, and I was like, what?
Yeah. to be getting around these days. That's never something that was really fully talked about. Now people are really interested in the sports side of things.
Well, I saw there was like a magazine article even about it more recently, actually. So yeah, people are discovering this part of it. I mean, it is in Canada. It's interesting. And as I recall, you were pretty forthright about how bad it can be. So I don't know. Are you still engaging with hockey in any way these days?
Not really. No, I don't too much. I'm watching more of it than ever, and I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan, so there's some reason to pay attention, I think, right now. But mostly I think it's just cool to share a story with my dad.
Right, of course.
And that's always been the struggle in our world with our ancestry and our culture and our connections, and that I can tell his hockey story. I guess it's my hockey story too, but I'm an artist now. Mm-hmm. And I guess that there's some similar mentalities, taking the good stuff away from it and putting it all together to, just try and share my family story, which is, what both Daniel and I are really trying to do. So I guess it's kind of cool. Like, our publicist team, like, they helped get my dad's hockey card into this cool little Instagram thing called Indigenous Rookie Cards
and get
the support. And my aunt was a part of that as well, but it was kind of just like feeling that support system from the music industry, from people like Kevin Drew. It's just not something that I ever imagined was possible. So it's really, really cool.
Nice. Now, Daniel, we've kind of talked about how Kevin entered the picture, and Adam alluded to the fact that with Kevin's guidance, the sound of your band, I feel like he was saying it kind of was stripped back on some level. But I'm actually wondering if you can elaborate upon Kevin's role in the shape of the sound of this project. Is it possible for you to do that?
Yeah. I don't know. I have an idea of what the record may have sounded like if Kevin didn't come into the picture. Just because Adam and I had got together and we did rehearse a little bit, and there were certain songs that didn't make it onto the record that we were excited about. But what we really appreciate is that Kevin wanted to create something new. He didn't want us to be leaning too much on our signature sounds in our solo projects. And I don't think that's an easy thing to do. But for Kevin, it was like he just pushed us in the right directions and never wanted to really force anything on us. It was always like our decisions. But he would just kind of guide us a bit, just to, and really fast. We worked really fast, and in working fast, there's not really too much time to like second guess yourself. A lot of it was just like coming from our subconscious or from like a pure place in our creative process. And Kevin and Niles just knew how to like work with that. And it was something really special, because I truly do think that it's a difficult thing to bring two artists who have like very signature sounds and to come up with something totally stripped back. And what it really did highlight was our songwriting.
Yeah.
And I think that's like something that a lot of people, at least in my solo projects, would be like my auntie. I remember every time I play acoustic guitar, she'd be like, "Dad, just play a little bit quieter so we could actually like hear what you're singing about." And I'm just like, "No, no, no." And for this, it was like vocals up high, acoustic guitar up high. Yeah. Like you could really see the structure of the songs and you could really feel it. And to have an impact, by stripping it back, I think is a really difficult thing to do. And I think we accomplished that with the help of Kevin, who brought in a lot of wisdom and, yeah, just experience, you know. In my solo project, I'm always just like, I got my head up my ass like so far that it's like hard to like make decisions. But when you see someone who has experience and who's like a mentor, I really leaned into it, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, and I think Kevin realized that too, because he knew that I was kind of a control freak with Zune. And when we did this session, I was just like, yep, yeah, I'm a collaborator now. Like, let's do a collaboration.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring up the songwriting. Both of you have alluded to this being a really lyric forward expression. And I just want to highlight something, because it's occurred to me in the past with your work, Daniel, that you tend to write lyrics in a relatively sparse way, but it's very catchy. Like you seem to be able to land on a few words, but you make them impactful. So the album begins with Cherry Coke, and I'm just going to read people up to ostensibly the chorus. Still I wonder where you go, still I wonder where you hide, still I wonder where I go, hills I roam. Still I wonder where you'll be, still I wonder when you'll find, stay beside, Cherry Coke, Ontario. Now, that is sparse, it's impressionistic, I don't quite know what it means, but it affects me deeply. My wife, when she hears songs like that, she's like, she really enjoys your singing. I'll say that. And the way you are, it's partially, so I read that and you guys chuckled because it's weird to hear your lyrics read to you by a guy in Edmonton. I know what that's like. but I also think it's just fascinating. It's just fascinating to recite the words because they're totally different from the experience of hearing you sing them, which is really lovely. And anyway, but then we get to Residential Military. Adam, I presume you wrote this. The lyrics primarily, maybe you collaborated, but then you get what I'm getting at, and I'll read the first verse of this one now. Birch bark canoe merges onto the freeway, no turn signal, how to switch lanes, paddle slower into slumber accelerator, space, time, reflex, and futuristic waves, worker boy swimming out in the deep, can't touch bottom, prehistorically. So you have this density of language in the very next song. Yeah. Like nothing really... the first thing that I read, I think, is almost calming. It's almost meditative. This is more of a barrage. Now, this is, I love them both. And this song, Residential Military, is amazing as well. Also gets in my head. But what I'm getting at is, it seems to me you have two different lyrical approaches. Adam, what do you make of what I'm getting at there? Is there something to it?
I think that there is. I can be like an incredibly complex and confused person, and the best way to let those things out of me is to do the stream, just let it, the stream of consciousness of letting it out. And I find that those, in those moments when I fully embrace that, something like that can, to me, it makes a lot of sense, you know?
And I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I guess what I'm getting at is I hear this juxtaposition on the record quite a bit. You either have someone saying a few things and repeating them almost like, you know, it's like I say, it's not meditative necessarily, because as you delve into what's being said, you realize there's some pain, and there's some trauma, and there's some heavy stuff going on. But yeah. I just find it interesting that you either get a couple of things repeated And this isn't the case for every song, by the way. I'm just pointing to these first two because it's quite a difference, is all I'm getting at.
But
I think it works. I'm not criticizing anything.
I didn't think you were either. Like, and I think with Daniel's thing, what I've always found in him is a really good sense of calm, and he'll say exactly what needs to be said in a really simple way. And I really love that about him. And so, the two of us kind of like yin and yang that way, as friends too. Mm-hmm. You know, he lets me ramble on and then, you know, says one thing. I'm like, right. Okay. We're good. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the way that we are. So it's really cool. And that song Cherry Coke is so powerful in that most simple way. And, you know, it's about Daniel's father and their relationship and a whole life of experience, a whole world of trauma. And so he, in a really simple way, like uplifted his whole ancestry.
But it's just abstract enough so that unless I talk to you, I don't exactly know where Daniel might be coming from with this song. It could be a whimsical memory of the summertime. You know, Cherry Coke in itself, first of all, good product placement. That was great. That's good. No, but it almost has like a summery, and the song itself, like a sort of summery, calming vibe. And then later, like with a song like Yahweh,
totally,
which again, very, very sparse lyrically, but it is impactful. Anyway, I think you know where I'm coming from, and Adam's spoken about it. Daniel, what do you make of where I'm coming from and what we've been talking about in terms of the way you and Adam complement each other as writers?
The lyrics that I like to use, it's like I grew up listening to like a lot of pop music and like Brian Wilson, and he collaborated with like a few different lyricists, and they were always like pretty complex. Like there's a song called Surf's Up that it just goes on and on and on and on, and it's so beautiful. But then when Brian wrote his one song, Caroline, now it's very like just a very beautiful, simple song, but it's with the melody and like the feelings that he puts into the song that like really like made it was like a very deep song for me. And
Caroline is very impactful.
Yeah.
Because the emotion is, it's an interesting, I guess where I'm coming from is it feels to me like you both are very emotional in your songcraft, but in some ways, Daniel, you put a lot of the emotion into the vocal, as much, and very relatively straightforward phrases.
Yeah.
Whereas in some cases, anyway, Adam tends to put all really like I don't know. It's like intellectually emotional. Like there's just a lot of language and a lot of precise. Not that I totally like. I think they're both very artful, but I feel like with, I don't know if you agree or not, Adam, but like you tend, it's almost like you've, it's almost, it's essay like lyrics. Do you agree with this? Does that bother you that I'm saying this, Adam? Are you bothered by me right now?
No, not at all. I mean, when we were in the studio, I was just writing and writing and writing. And I tend to do that. When I was going through a lot of healing, I was encouraged to journal. And I thought that was great. You know, I had to like kind of go A, B, C of what was happening in my life. But the thing that I found about it was that it wasn't being creative. And so the way that I overcame that in journaling was just writing everything that was going through my mind. And as a songwriter nowadays, I'll kind of like go through those lyrics and pick out things that are more cohesive or relatable, or what I understand about my brain is that it kind of misfires a lot, is what I feel.
Yeah.
And so I go A, C, B, you know? I have to kind of like rearrange that. And that's why these podcasts are so interesting, right? Because you never know what someone's going to say or if they even make sense. I don't even know what the next words that are going to come out of my mouth are.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
And so that's how I write in my journaling. And then I kind of use that as a tool to see what's happening with myself.
Well, I don't want to be, yeah, and I don't want to be too heavy-handed about what I'm about to say, because you say journaling, and I think what I'm trying to convey is that, to me, sometimes you write more journalistically. Like, it feels mm-hmm. like you're yeah. talking about specific subject matter, historical, sociocultural, or political subject matter, and you're obviously writing about it in an artful and an impressionistic way, but I feel like I have a sense of where you're coming from, maybe more than someone who's writing very sparsely. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Daniel, any further thoughts on my bizarre line of questioning?
No, I think there's Adam and I learn a lot from each other, and in watching Adam write the way that he does, is it adds to me, and it makes me think about like some of the songs, like for Zune, where like I have a song that's going to be on LP2 that I wrote probably like 7 years ago, and it's the song that has the most lyrics I've ever written, where I don't repeat anything. It's just like the whole song, every line is something new and different. And I think for a while I would just like, I would try to like simplify what I'm trying to say, and in a way where I could always remember it, you know, because like,
yeah,
I used to love Bob Dylan, but some of his songs were so long, and I'm like, how does he remember all those lyrics? And so for me, I just try to keep it as simple as possible,
yeah,
but like try to compromise by putting a lot of emotion into it.
Well, we talked about the last time you were on, Daniel, I think you use your voice as an additional texture. Almost.
Yeah. Mm. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So it's a little bit, I don't know, Adam, I know like you sing beautifully as well, and you have a definite character to your voice, but I don't know that you use, I feel like you, when you're on a mic, you want to say something like specific. Is that, again, I don't mean to be reductive also, because I don't know how much lyrical collaboration you two have done on this particular record. Adam, was there much lyrical collaboration?
Yes and no. You know, we were all kind of given like our own little space and time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we were like coexisting, and yeah, we definitely throw ideas off of each other and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But Daniel might be recording a part, and then I'd be like kind of writing or whatever. And then you'd show everyone and be like, yeah, I like that. Or, you know,
right.
we had to change things in real time. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying. Like, I've never been able to like write a chorus, really. Like, that's one of my great struggles as a songwriter. It's like, what's the hook?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And Daniel does amazing hooks because he's got a poignancy to what he's doing, and I'm kind of more rambling on. Mm. So yeah, I get into the sonic. Like I do guitar licks for choruses instead. Mm. You know.
Yeah.
And so we all kind of leaned into our strengths.
Right.
Yeah.
And because of the collaboration, we were able to make new creations. So even the few demos that we did have are pretty different than the final product.
Do you, Adam, like if you can characterize, it's a relatively short record, this one that we're talking about. Can you mm-hmm. possibly characterize where, in a general sense, where these songs might have come from for you in this time and space that you were given to sit in a studio and write things? Do you have a sense of where your head was at that in that period?
Yeah, it was a lot about it's about family.
Yeah,
I think, you know, because yeah, Daniel had lost his father in the pandemic, and I'm a kind of a new father, and so those are really reflective things that create big change and inspiration in you. So, and then again, we worked so fast that it was actually like, what is here and now? What are you right now? And Kevin was amazing. That was the most amazing thing about him, was just getting us to not only just shed our sound, but it was actually just shed any insecurity that we had. And so I really wanted to also just do some pretty serious uplifting, because it was easier to do the lifting when Daniel was there.
Yeah. Fair enough. Daniel, sorry again for the loss of your father. Can you characterize where you talked a little bit about Cherry Coke there, but can you talk a little bit about where these songs were coming from for you in this period?
Yeah, just, you know, my dad, Glenn, had passed away. And then one day I was just like, you know, learning about what residential school my dad went to, and my auntie and my uncle and my grandpa and my nana, like just like there's a whole list on the internet that you can find. And, you know, I like zoomed in really close to the Broken Head one, and it just started to like, I got very emotional about it. And I remember one day I like messaged Adam and I was just like, dude, we got to like write some songs that are like, you know, to honor our family who have gone to these places. And I was like, we have to like, I want to start writing songs like that. And, and then I wrote, Mother, that which was, you know, about my dad kind of telling me little snippets about like his experience of like being taken away and his other brothers not even knowing where he went, you know, and but the agents, they came and took him away and put him in these schools. And then a lot of awful things happened to him that he didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. And that was like we had a whole generation of people who felt like they didn't have a voice because it was taken from them as a young person by these nuns and priests. And so I just really wanted to make sure that we were giving a voice to maybe some of these people who that don't have a voice and didn't. And and then, you know, coincidentally the Kamloops graves were found and while we were recording, and then it became very apparent that what we were doing was, you know, really important, and that we wanted to, there was a new discussion happening, you know, because for a long time no one believed that there was children buried, you know, there was no one, everyone would call us crazy and gaslight a whole generation of multiple generations. And we wanted to let everyone know that we were still here and alive and well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you articulating that, and I appreciate you two coming together because it is a nice marriage. Not to invoke marriage again, I keep trying to get you guys to get married. I keep saying it. I'm sorry, but it is a nice marriage of that very direct conversational lyricism and that emotional impressionistic lyricism. Yeah, the journal keeping slash instinctual feeling slash, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, we are trying to articulate something that is real and happened and is happening. So I just want to say I thank you for this record and for coming together. And I want to talk about what's next for you. Before we go, though, like I mentioned, we've talked about Kevin Drew. We mm-hmm. talked about the time that I met you, Daniel, there when I was going to interview Kevin. But you were in the bat house. Is that right? That's where you were?
Yeah.
Right. Now, that is the Tragically Hip studio. I don't know if either of you are particular Tragically Hip fans, but that must be even, like, that's, Adam, that's their studio, right? That's the one they set up.
Yeah.
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 So
yeah. It's really cool spot. And to us, it felt right because it was like a really glorified home studio, which is often how Daniel and I work, is kind of doing it on our own. So it had that kind of vibe to it. And yeah, you could definitely picture the Hip making some of those records there for sure.
Yeah, and they have like sort of like Hip iconography in there, right? Is that right? Like artifacts and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. The Phantom Power device was in there. That was a pretty big highlight for me. And
yeah.
my son loves listening to that record now. And, you know, talk about some hockey songs too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite records of theirs. So that's exciting. So, I mean, I don't know. Daniel, I feel like you're just taking everything as it comes. You know, you're relatively new to all this. Was it freaky at all being in the Hip studio?
Well, yeah. My brother tried to turn me on to the Hip years and years and years ago when I was, you know, like knee-high to a duck. And I never understood it. I, you know, I didn't really understand much about music back then, you know, but now coming back into music, you know, being away for a really long time and up somehow ending up at the Tragically Hip studio with Gord Downie's wife treading water in the pool. Like I was just like, whoa, like what is going on here? Like kind of, sometimes you got to like pinch yourself or, you know, or I learned a word this year called disassociation. And
right.
I was feeling that. And I have been feeling that with music because a lot of things are happening pretty quickly. And, you know, when all the years that I wasn't doing music, it felt like I was taking things just day by day and just like really like thinking about what the next thing I was going to do. And now it's just kind of like go, and you know,
yeah.
Sometimes it can be overwhelming.
No, yeah, it's good. It's good to take stock and be, you know, conscious of your surroundings, but don't let them get to you. And it sounds like you're getting there. But I like talking to Daniel. I must say, Adam, because I feel like he's still figuring stuff out. And not jaded. It's just like, yeah, this thing's happening. It's amazing. Like, that's great. I appreciate that spirit. So this record, Sewn Back Together, has been out a little bit now. And you've been doing other things. Adam, you alluded to your first show together, so we'll talk about that in a second as well. But future plans? Are there plans for you to start, or has it already begun? Are you thinking about writing together again? Adam, can you speak to that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're really excited to start playing some music together. It's an opportunity, some shows. And so I think you'll see more and more announcements coming very quickly. But show is one of the Broken Social Scene shows. We've been announced for Sled Island. And just really excited to sort of see how people respond to us reimagining the record. And yeah, the live thing allows us to kind of put ourselves back together even more. So I think that, you know, it'll be I'm really excited for people to see it live.
Nice, nice. Daniel, what's who's in the live version of this band?
So it's Adam, Andrew McLeod. He's also known as Sunsetter and plays drums in Zune. And then Eric
Lorenzo.
Lorenzo. And our buddy Derek Durant.
Okay, cool. So that's the band. And
Five piece.
And have you practiced yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We're going to be going down soon to do some more before the Massey Hall show.
Right. Okay, cool. And so any new songs emerging yet, Daniel?
Always writing. Okay. Always trying to write a song a day at least, you know, or at least a riff a day, you know, just something just to keep the creative flow going.
So you got the Tragically Hip Studio. That's a magical place. Massey Hall.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be... you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you this right now from my own experience doing stuff like this. You know, you'll be like, holy shit, we're playing Massey Hall. Then you'll get on stage. You're like, yeah, it's fine. It's normal. Do you know what I mean? Is that where you think is going to happen? Adam, that's probably where your head's at, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're doing the thing that we love to do. And, you know, all the nerves and anxieties and stuff, those come second to passion. So
yeah,
I feel really just excited.
Okay. Now, if people want to learn more about Omigaze or anything else you guys are up to, I want to give you a chance to talk about that. So, Adam, first of all, this project, where can people go to learn more about it? And then within your own pursuits, where would you like to send them?
I'd probably follow along on Instagram is the quickest way to find all the avenues. And our record, Sewn Back Together, is on Arts and Crafts.
Right. Okay. Daniel, anything further to add there? Any Zune plans? You mentioned LP2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just finishing. It should be done in the next month. It is all done.
Okay.
Just waiting for Owen Pallett to send over his files. And then we're off to the races, I guess.
Do you need me to message Owen and tell him to get cracking? Because I can do that. Usually when I ask Owen to do something, he does it. I'll just tell you that. No.
I've had like five different people like being like, hey, what's going on? Are you going to finish that Zune record? But, you know, he's super busy.
He is busy. Yeah. He just.
You know, it's been like a year. So kind of like needed it to be done soon.
Okay. I get what's happening right now and I'm going to step aside. I think it's between you and him and I'm sure it'll get sorted out soon. That's good. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate this conversation. I want to go out on a song from the record, if possible, Sewn Back Together. This can be tricky. We have two people. So I'm going to assign one of you to pick. The other one has veto power. Discussions can ensue. We'll see what happens. I'm going to go to Adam. Adam, what song would you like to go out on and why?
I think that it would be really cool to go on Ogeen.
Ogeen, okay.
Yeah, which is like Mother. And it's a beautiful song. I think it's a representation of all the things that we felt on the record. And and it's one that we're really excited to play live.
All right, very nice choice. Daniel, do you wish to veto Adam's choice, or are you fine to go with Ogin?
I'm perfectly fine with that. I think that one needs some more loving these days.
Now, Daniel, is this something you came up with, so to speak, in terms of the lyrics?
This is the song that I wrote about my dad and him telling me about his experiences of being taken from his home and just stories that I've learned from my uncle. I mostly learned from my uncle. My uncle was kind of like my dad's interpreter because my dad had fallen down the flight of stairs when I was pretty young. And after that, his speech was kind of like really slurred and it was hard to understand. So my uncle Matt would always tell me stories or try to interpret what my dad was saying. And this song is kind of like that. And that's the indigenous experience too. You know, a lot of our healing is like, it's like spotted, you know, it's like you learn information, not directly, you know, like a lot of maybe white folks go to university and they learn a course about their past or something. And for us, a lot of our families are broken. So it's like we learn information about our dad, maybe through our grandma or our uncle. And that's what that kind of song is about.
I see. Okay. Well, I appreciate that explanation. Thank you so much. This is Ogin from the wonderful new record, Sewn Back Together by Om Bigaze. Listen, I want to thank you both. Daniel, Adam, thank you so much for being on this show, back on the show, both of you.
Yeah,
thank you so much for making time for me, and I wish you the best of luck with everything. And go get them at Massey Hall, people. I know it's going to be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Vish.
Yeah, Vish. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right. Well, thanks again to Adam and Daniel for appearing on this, the 680th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcast. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, I encourage you to visit my website, which is simply vishkhanna.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative. Or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkhanna. Also, please consider visiting patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast a-going. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. Some of that content is derived from some overtime I spend with current guests. Sometimes I also dig into my old audio archives from all the other interviews, and there's hundreds of them really that I've done prior to starting this particular podcast, and you know, they are varying quality as technology changes, and I'm still getting better every week at doing these things. So you know, I do my best to share stuff I think is interesting, but I sometimes wince when I listen back to any of it, and sometimes I don't even listen to it. I just see that it's there, I'm like, I don't want to revisit this thing, I'm sure it's fine, put it up. And people seem to like it. So again, this is the way you can support the show financially. It's the easiest way is by going to the Patreon, because there's no other real income coming in. All the podcast companies, they let us put our shows on their things, but they don't give us money for them. And it's a weird part of culture now. But the word gets out, and then people like you step up on things like Patreon, or you come to our shows if we're doing live shows, and you write us nice notes. It's great. I mean, that part of it's great. But anyway, in terms of the dough, if you can support the show, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol. I appreciate it, and I thank you very much. Oh, and if you'd like a Creative Control t-shirt for your generosity, please message me on Patreon, and I will get you one while supplies last. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, and Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Ombigaze and subscribing to this podcast or following it and telling your friends about it and maybe encouraging them to do the same. It all means so much. I will talk to you very soon. Be well. Stay healthy. If you can, wear a mask. They help. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.